The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
The investigation into what happened, what they knew, when they knew it. It was a big story for us here in the Philadelphia, South Jersey region, but certainly made national news when that chemical spill happened. It was East Palestine, Ohio, right across the border, though. And you may remember Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro became involved. Many Pennsylvanians concerned about what was in the water flowing our way, if you will.
Remember they toss a rock into like one of the creeks and you just see it like spiral out like the chemicals.
Yes, remember that? And so we were all worried about it. And so now, you know, and then remember the cleanup of that spill, East Palestine, Ohio, after all of the devastation. Many of the residents saying, is this really, this doesn't look good. And the officials burned those five tankers with, I mean, just thousands and thousands of gallons of toxic vinyl chloride. I remember even being told, if don't burn poison ivy that you've picked in your yard, because the actual poison ivy gets in a smoke form, and if anybody's allergic to it, you breathe it in. So it just kind of defied common sense, did it not? And then over time, people said, huh, could this be political? What's going on here? And now the latest, the headline, well, what did the Biden White House know? They said that families were safe, nothing to see here. Was it toxic? Oh, no, it's all fine. So the back and forth, and now we have the investigation. The truth always comes out, perhaps too late, but we want to bring in Leslie Pacey, who's a senior environmental officer for government accountability for that project. As we think about the investigation here, what's really happening, and although it's always good to get the information, well, not if you live there, not if your kids and you were breathing in that air, drinking the water, you've lost perhaps your home values, and now this is more important than ever to keep this in the headlines. And so somebody who is keeping it in the headlines and talking about this, Leslie Pacey. So Leslie, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And just to give a little background before we get into this, I mean, this is something that is near and dear to you for many reasons. Can you take us through why you, as a parent, a mom, why you got involved in this kind of activism and why it's personal for you to stand up for people who perhaps thought that they were, you know, told by their government that, oh, there's nothing to see here and everything's safe and everything's fine, but then the people suffer with perhaps, you know, medical effects, cancers. Can you just tell us what motivated you in the first place to do this kind of activism?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. My daughter, our middle child, was diagnosed with leukemia in 2004, and she's now 25 and doing well. But at that time, Sarah was part of a cancer cluster in South Alabama, where I live, and so I started digging into that. And then since then, the Deepwater Horizon happened in my backyard, so that was in 2010, so 6 years later. So it wasn't involved in my daughter's particular diagnosis, but, you know, the cancer here in South Alabama has really increased, especially in my county, in Baldwin County. So that's been an ongoing concern for me. So I started working about 8 years ago with a law firm in Miami, working to hold BP accountable for using the corrective dispersants, which made that oil spill so much worse. And over time, ended up working with the Government Accountability Project based out of Washington, D.C., and we are the oldest, whistleblower organization. We do whistleblowing work and strengthen whistleblower protections throughout the entire world. So I'm very fortunate to be here and to be in this position. Specifically now with East Palestine, how I got into East Palestine was we were kind of watching the situation unfold in sheer disbelief that there was this massive illegal burn off of chemicals, and that this is something that our government allowed. And we noticed that there was an independent tester there, Scott Smith, who was finding the dioxin and going to people's homes and testing where the EPA wouldn't test. And was finding some elevated levels of dioxins and on people's property. So that really sparked our interest, and we ended up representing Scott as a citizen whistleblower, when usually we represent, you know, government whistleblowers or contractors who want to speak truth to power and, you know, fight fraud, waste, and abuse. But Scott was sort of his own one man show fighting the lack of transparency, if you will, in East Palestine. And he has been to many, many disasters and doing the same thing there as well. So he has been a force. And so since we got since we started working with Scott, we ended up amassing a lot more whistleblowers, just incredible people, scientists, some behind the scenes, some EPA, some, contractors for the EPA, and really that has driven our campaign in East Palestine, that and the fact that residents are sick and have been sick. And they've known the truth in their hearts, but they've been, you know, watching their families go through so much health issues they never had, you know, prior to this derailment and the open burning of these chemicals. So, you know, that has been a great motivator, and we've just kind of stayed with it.
And so in this one, you know, the headline that's just so scary, I think for anybody who's ever had something like this happen in your community, I mean, in this one, it was famous for us and consumed our headlines here in Pennsylvania. And specifically, I'm reporting to you from Philadelphia, because, you know, you want to trust that when, you know, environmental folks with the government or FEMA or the president who's in, whoever happens to be in power, that they're going to do right by you. But the headline here is cancer cluster, and that the concern by these families is, you know, OMG, you know, that this train carrying all of these hazardous materials, it not only derails and spills, but the fact that they chose to burn it off like that. At the time, I mean, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, I'm not, you know, I looked at that and said, ooh, I just don't think that this is a good idea to burn this. Can you take me through now with what you're finding with the Government Accountability Project? You are their senior environmental officer, obviously, Leslie, but can you take me through the findings and what now are your next steps?
Yes, yes, and you're exactly right. You know, you don't have to be a scientist. You don't have to be an environmental expert. You just have to have eyes, right, to see that those black plumes probably weren't safe. And if you dig a little deeper, you know that wasn't really legal in terms of what the EPA's own statutes say. They have banned open burning of chemicals since back in the 1980s. Okay, since 1980s.
And by the way, let me just say, for those of you watching on YouTube, you know, where you can see these plumes of smoke right now that actually Stacey was referring to, that we have, it actually looks like some weird storm brewing. That's how bad it looks. These dark clouds and then the fiery, I mean, it just looks strange, and it's not like your campfire or anything of that nature filling the skies. So I just wanted to give that visual. Sorry, go ahead, Leslie.
Yeah, it was creating over 100 dangerous chemicals. They took a bad spill and made it exponentially worse, forming terrible chemicals and products of incomplete combustion like dioxins, which are some of the most dangerous chemicals known to man. So, and then it spread it out over 16 states. So then we have this massive plume that went atmospheric. It shot up all the way to Canada and also lingered quite heavily across the state line right there. As you know, it's Pennsylvania. It's just a stone's throw away from these tracks. And western Pennsylvania got hit really hard. So it was terrible. So now we're at a point where, you know, we've been doing these Freedom of Information Act public records requests since the beginning. But, of course, our government doesn't release them right away. So we ended up having to sue Department of Homeland Security and FEMA to get these records because we knew they were important. They never, back in 23, after this derailment and after these fires, President Biden did an executive order, as you know, where he asked FEMA to come in and assess the unmet needs of the community. This gave residents some hope, thinking, oh, okay, maybe they'll come in and they'll get us out of here. You know, they'll declare a disaster, you know, enact the Stafford Act, and just, you know, help fund our permanent relocation away from this danger because we are being attacked by these chemicals, and or get some medical care, right? But that's not what happened. In fact, they couldn't even get a hold of, according to these emails that we discovered and talking to residents, they couldn't even get a hold of FEMA. They were not able to really get their message to them. And all of these, you know, this community-driven response or you know, unmet needs assessment was just really in on paper only as community-driven. It was not... the residents didn't get a seat at the table. And we're finding out some really shocking things, as you've mentioned, you know, the mention of cancer clusters and, you know, trying to set out a tripwire to identify them and track them, and then not telling the residents about it, but telling the White House, you know, hey, look, this is something that is, this is going to happen. And then for everyone to discuss not to releasing this to the public, this goes all the way up to the White House, and, you know, and not to release this to the media, it's really, really shocking.
It is shocking. And so specifically, you know, one of the headlines here as we move forward is that they knew, that FEMA knew at the very least, you know, if you read this, you know, Leslie, it looks like... Mm-hmm. They certainly knew there was a risk of this, given, like you said, the severity of these the strength of these chemicals, what we know about them, and so what can you, you know, what do you see that they knew, and then who knew, and now what do you do about it?
Right, right. So, you know, I do want to point out that what they were telling people very early on is the message of trust your government. We are here to help. Your air is safe. Your water is safe. And not to worry. And frankly, the residents were being gaslit. But what we're seeing in these emails is the polar opposite of that. It is this concern that there was a, quote, really toxic plume, unquote, that there was a potential for cancer clusters, that they wanted Norfolk Southern to pay for any health care that might come out of it, which, you know, through the Department of Justice, they worked with them, but it never really turned into anything. They knew they would need $65 million from Norfolk over 20 years for medical monitoring. So this is not something that they were taking lightly behind the scenes. Of course, I think that the consent decree amounted to $25 million for medical monitoring, but I did not see health care in that consent decree. So the residents are still sitting there, no health care, no means of moving. A lot of them don't have the financial means to move, and they don't have, they don't feel good about selling their home when they know it's contaminated. I mean, dioxins stay in the environment for at least 125 years, and none of those homes have been remediated. So people don't feel good about selling a home that they think might make another family sick. And they can't really afford to leave, a lot of them. So really what needs to happen, to answer your question, is we need the powers that be, the current administration to, you know, I know they've said that we, you know, support these residents, we have your back, but somebody needs to go in there and actually, you know, provide some relief to these residents and some assistance, because it hasn't happened yet.
You know, I know our executive producer, Dan Borowski, had the, and this is so important, the people impacted who are living. I remember at the time interviewing, there were, you know, pregnant moms, families, people with children. Do I leave my home? Do I go back in? Let's just listen in, because this is front and center. It should never be about politics. It should never be about any of that. But these are individuals who are now living with this, stuck with this, and living in fear as well. Not just, I mean, many of them say they're sick, but let's just listen to this as a reminder to who the real victim is.
Which include people from Pennsylvania. You're just 3.5 miles away, right?
Yes, correct. That's correct, yes.
What can you tell us?
All we heard was sirens. We was all in bed. Fast forward, we started getting burning lips, watery eyes, nauseated, and dry mouth, dry lips. Fast forward 18 weeks after the train was blown up, unnecessarily, I might add. That's been proven. I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So July 10th of 2023, I had to have a double mastectomy. Since then, I've gone through 4 rounds of chemotherapy. Our daughter, who's 24 years old, she's asking us questions like, am I going to be allowed? Can I have children after this? We don't have the answers.
She fears cancer. And she does ask us, am I going to be okay? Because we don't know.
I mean, it does break your heart. I mean, Leslie, for these residents, what, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of, I don't know. I know that you went through this with your daughter, Sarah, as you said. As you know, mm-hmm. this gentleman, you think of, so that happened, what was it, from February to that summer, he developed mm-hmm. that tumor. And I know there are different individuals, not just you and your group, even student researchers who went in and have been trying to help, you know, with these families and tracking them and that sort of thing. But what happens next for these families?
Well, I think these families are really, they really need out of there. They need to be helped. And so I think what happens next for them is that we take this information and we get it into the right hands, and hopefully they will be able to move. I mean, Darlington, where the O'Connells live, and I could tell that was the O'Connells. Uh-huh. I've spoken to them many times. They're really good people. You know, where they live, they got, you know, really hit hard. And in some ways, this is not just the East Palestine train derailment. It's the East Palestine. It's the Darlington. You know, it is. Pennsylvania got so much of this plume, and now some of the creeks, you know, that are flowing that way. You know, and there's remediation work still underway in East Palestine. This cleanup is not over. They're still hauling, you know, hundreds of thousands of truckloads of contaminated dirt out of East Palestine, and it's on the Pennsylvania side. It's near the tracks. So, you know, what these residents are experiencing is absolutely real. I've been there. I've experienced a lot of those same symptoms. This, the first time I went there was 6 months after, and I couldn't believe how immediate I felt sick, and had weird symptoms for weeks after I came back. And these folks are living there to this day and still getting continually exposed. So the exposures are not over. And so that, I just want to make that point. They still need to get out. I know Vice President Vance had come in and said, you know, when he was asked whether or not, you know, they were going to declare a disaster declaration, he felt like that, you know, that time had passed. I'm here to say it hasn't. They are still being exposed, and they still need help and action.
Well, we want to continue the conversation with you, get the reaction from this administration now, because I think, you know, what you're saying, to your point, this remains an urgent need by these individuals. Leslie Pacey, thank you so much for joining us. What can people do to get involved or to reach out to the people suffering or support you?
Well, I would like to say that we can't do what we do without whistleblowers. We're a whistleblower organization. And so if there is anybody that wants to come forward with any information that hasn't come out yet that they want to share, that they it's on their heart to share, we can work with them. We can have conversations. We don't have to they don't have to go public. They can just simply, you know, talk to us, and that will help make a difference.
We really appreciate you. Hope you come back. We will continue the conversation. Leslie Pacey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.